This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This is Nancy Jones, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from What I Came to Tell You by Tommy Hayes. Back in the main room, Leela and their father and Jesse sat around the roaring wood stove, sipping from glasses of wine. Jesse had spent the day in the kitchen cooking. Their father had come home mid-afternoon, put leaves in the dining room table, brought up extra chairs from the basement, and split a big pile of wood. Sudi and Grover had cleaned the house, shoveled the front walk, and picked up limbs that had fallen and piled them in the woodshed for kindling. Sudi had taken Clay back to her bedroom to show him her nightlight collection. That left Grover sitting off to the side, sipping eggnog, while Emily sat by the fire reading her book, her long hair curtaining her face. The fire in the wood stove sputtered when a gust of wind whistled down the chimney. "This reminds me how it used to get up on the Rhone after a big snow," Leela said, looking toward Emily. "We had some mean winds up there, didn't we?" Emily didn't look up from her book. Sometimes it'd blow so hard it seemed like it might shove the cabin right off the side of the mountain, Leela said. Grover wandered back to Sudi's room. Sudi had been collecting rock nightlights since she was little, different colored stones and crystals with lights inside them. She had collected dozens over the years, including a couple of lighted fountains with running water. At night, a warm glow came from Sudi's room. "This room is something else," Clay said, bending down beside one of the nightlight water fountains. Grover sat on a beanbag in the corner. Sudi bent down beside Clay and showed him how, with a flick of a switch, she could make the lights on the water fountain change color. "Emily's got to see this," Clay said, getting up. Then he stopped. On second thought, he said, "Maybe another time." "What's wrong with Emily?" Sudi asked. "She looks sad." Clay glanced at Grover, and Grover thought, "He knows about me standing out there, too. Maybe the whole family knows." Sudi's windows rattled with a big gust of wind. "Our daddy died on Thanksgiving," Clay said. How could he have forgotten? Grover had been so ready to feel guilty about last night that he hadn't considered the obvious reason. When everyone sat down to Thanksgiving dinner, they took hands around the table. Sudi and Clay, who sat on either side of Grover, took his hands. Jesse sat where their mother always had. He changed into a nice shirt and his bolo tie. He'd let his hair down and combed it so that it fell gray and shining down to his shoulders. He reminded Grover of a distinguished Civil War general. Jesse bowed his head, and so did everyone else. Grover began to feel like he was spying, and besides, it was Jesse doing the blessing, so he closed his eyes and bowed his head out of respect. "Father," Jesse began, "we thank you for the food we are about to receive." The wind howled down the chimney, and the windows rattled. "We thank you for the many blessings you have showered upon us. We thank you for being our rod and our staff as we've traveled through a valley we know all too well." Grover felt a tingle of warmth up his spine and across the back of his head. Holding hands like this, with his family and Jesse and the round trees, made him feel part of something bigger. It was the same feeling he got in the bamboo forest. and we thank you for looking after our departed loved ones until such time as we can be reunited in your presence. In your name we pray, amen. Amen, everyone said, including Grover. Emily smiled at Grover like she'd felt what he'd felt. Everyone was smiling like they'd all felt it. Something about Jesse's blessing had lifted something from all of them. "Can y'all please pass the crescent rolls?" Sudie asked, sounding desperate. The wind howled in the chimney a long time, the lights flickered, and then they heard a slow, huge crash, a kind of thunderous, tearing sound, like the earth itself was being torn out from under them. The house shook, and dishes rattled. Stories Grover had read in the paper about earthquakes and tsunamis in far-off places flashed through his mind. The lights flickered some more, went off, came back on, then went off for good. People had come out, some with their flashlights, to look at the huge tree that had fallen across the street and darkened the neighborhood. Jesse said it was a tulip poplar. Its roots had pulled up out of the ground in a perfect rectangle. The hole reminded Grover of the neat graves Charles dug with his backhoe. After parents had made sure there were no fallen wires, neighborhood kids climbed onto the tree as if onto a fallen giant. Sudie and Clay joined them, disappearing into the maze of limbs. Grover walked up its great trunk, stepping on limbs that only an hour before had been 40 feet in the air. Somewhere in that labyrinth of limbs, a hand took Grover's and pulled him up. It was Emily. She pulled him onto a big limb where she was standing. Look! She lifted her eyes to the sky. Stars had poured into the space where the tree had stood. Grover looked at her, but she was still looking up. It went through his mind to tell her he'd stood outside her window. He opened his mouth, but what came out was, "Clay told me about how your father died on Thanksgiving." She looked at him, then back up at the sky. "And how you light a candle for him." "He's such a blabbermouth," Emily snapped. "You were the one who told me we can't keep the dead to ourselves." She looked back up at the sky and her face softened. After a minute, she pointed to a very bright star. "That's the dog star. I know that much." Back inside, their father had lighted candles around the living room and kitchen. They finished their Thanksgiving meal by candlelight and moved into the den to eat dessert. He opened the doors to the wood stove so that it lit up the room. He refilled Leela's wine glass and his own. "I forgot to get Merlin in tonight," Jesse said, sipping from a mug of hot tea. "Will he be all right in the snow?" Clay asked. "He'll find him a warm place to curl up, or slip into somebody's house." Grover watched Emily, who'd already finished her pecan pie, and picked up her book again, sitting close by the stove to read. "Leela," Jesse said, "they won't be getting our power back on tonight, and all y'all have is that electric baseboard heat. I have a kerosene heater I could bring over." "We'll be fine," Leela said. "We're mountain people." "Why doesn't everyone spend the night?" their father said. "We've got the wood stove to keep us warm." Grover looked at his father. He was so different these days. It would have been their mother who suggested everyone stay over. More and more, Grover had gotten the feeling that his father was trying to do what his mother would have wanted him to. "It'll be okay," Jesse looked at Leela. "I'm worried about y'all." Please stay. Sudie put her hands together. It'll be like an indoor camping trip. Let's spend the night, Mama, Clay said. We don't want to put you out, Leela said. Clay can sleep in Grover's room, and Emily in Sudie's, their father said, and you can sleep in the guest room. Emily whispered something into her mother's ear. Sweetheart, Leela said, I think it'll be all right not to light it one night. No, it won't, Emily said under her breath, especially not tonight. Leela sighed, honey, please. Not tonight, Emily said again. Emily, her mother said, our house will be colder than a meat locker. But, Mama, that's enough, Emily, Leela said sternly. Emily went back to where she'd been sitting, picked up her book, but didn't open it. She stared into the fire with a kind of look like she'd made up her mind about something, then opened her book. Grover had told Clay he'd be happy to sleep on the floor in the sleeping bag. I like sleeping bags, Clay had said, wriggling down inside it. Reminds me of the couple of times me and Daddy camped. Their father had put a candle in Grover's room, telling him to be sure and blow it out before he went to bed. I like your room, Clay said, glancing out Grover's window, where they could make out the ribs of the bamboo by the flickering candlelight. Feels like we're in the middle of a canebrake. He eyed the bamboo critically. Some of that needs pruning. I've got a new pair of loppers. He yawned and scooted down into his bag and turned on his side, facing away from Grover. Grover, he said, turning halfway back. Yeah? Just so you know, his eyes met Grover's for a second. Then he turned away again. My sister likes you. He scooted down into his sleeping bag. Grover felt a tightness in his throat. She said that? With Emily, it's what she doesn't say that you need to listen to. Clay yawned. She talks to me about most things, but she hasn't said one word about you. Grover lay there, thinking that one over. After a while, he said, Clay? He didn't answer. Grover got out of bed and leaned over him. He was already asleep. Grover gave him a little shake, but he groaned and turned over. Grover climbed back into bed, blowing the candle out on his dresser. He heard laughter in the living room. Jesse had gone home. But their father and Leela had stayed up. As his eyes grew used to the dark, Grover could see outside his window how the bamboo swayed in the wind. He listened to the rustling for a while. Was it the wind? Or was someone outside? Or something? In this weather? His heart stopped when a masked face hovered in the window, looking in. He almost cried out. It took a minute to see that the face belonged to a raccoon. Maybe the fall of the great tree had disturbed his nest. With paws pressed against the glass, the raccoon boldly studied Grover's room, then, seeming satisfied, lumbered back into the bamboo. Grover woke late in the night. He'd heard something. He didn't see the raccoon in the window. Clay quietly snored. Grover pressed the little light on his watch that showed the time. 1 in the morning. He heard the creak of floorboards. Grover pulled on his pants and walked out to the living room. The main room was still pretty warm. Their father had filled the wood stove and turned the damper down. He heard the front door shut. Looking out the window, he saw Emily in her coat, walking down their walk. Grover grabbed his coat and went out the front door, careful to shut it quietly behind him. "Hey, Emily," he called. Emily turned around and hissed, You're going to wake them up. Where are you going? He whispered. I have something I need to do. Can I come? Go back inside before somebody misses us, she said. The wind had stopped. A full moon was out, showing the great tree sprawled across the road. I'll be back soon, she said. Why can't I go with you then? Keep your voice down, she said. Emily's house was pitch black dark. Grover still had the flashlights he'd been carrying in his coat from working in the bamboo forest. He handed one to Emily. It's freezing in here, Grover said. He'd never been in their house. As he shined his flashlight around, he saw in the hall a real weaving of what looked like mountains going on forever. What's that? Grover asked. He'd never seen anything quite like it. Nana's, she said, heading into the front room. Your grandmother weaves? She has a big old loom, Emily said from the front room. He saw another weaving farther down the hall, of a cabin on a mountainside. He walked into the kitchen and saw a weaving over the sink, cows in a pasture. Everywhere he shined his flashlight was a weaving. There were weavings of sunflowers, of mountain laurel in bloom, of creeks, waterfalls, and one of a bridge spanning a river. Grover came up next to Emily, who stood at the front window, looking out on the moonlit street. He'd never seen his house from over here. The overgrown grass and bushes looked like a snow-covered jungle, and the old dark house rising behind it looked neglected, like the sadness of the past year had seeped through the walls and out into the yard. Emily struck a match against the side of a box of kitchen matches and lit the big candle. Grover remembered with a start last night standing just outside the window looking in at her. She pulled up a chair and sat in front of the candle. Now what? Grover asked. That's it, she said. You came all the way over here to light this candle? She stared into the flame. He shivered. Well, now that it's lit, can we go back? I'm staying. She folded her arms and watched the candle. Grover pulled up a chair and sat beside her. Suit yourself, she said. After a while, Grover said, it's cold in here. I'll get us some blankets, she said. As he watched her light disappear down the hall, he pointed his flashlight at the weaving of the family on the wall. He reached into his coat pocket for his sketchbook. As he sketched by the light of his flashlight, he saw the notes he'd taken from Sam earlier that day in the cemetery. She came back in, carrying blankets, gave him one, then she wrapped herself in the other. In the flickering candlelight, she looked like an Indian princess sitting in front of a campfire. Candlelight, thought Grover, made the world look old. He tucked the notebook back into his coat pocket, looked out at the night, then back at her. He cleared his throat. How's it going? Emily looked at him. What have you been doing lately? Emily frowned. You're acting very weird all of the sudden. I'm making small talk, he said. I've been told girls like to have conversations first. Before what? Grover, what are you getting at? Forget it, he sighed. I was trying to ask you to go to the Christmas waltz. I was told girls like conversation before they're asked things. Maybe some girls, she said. I'm hopeless when it comes to girls. He kept staring at the candle. With this girl, you're not, she said. Grover looked at her. You'll go with me? Yes, she said. Oh, he said. They both jumped when they heard a sudden strange crying. Merlin was outside on the ledge, staring in at them. Maybe we ought to let him in, Emily said. He might be cold. But Clay said, your mama said, I know. Merlin jumped from the windowsill and disappeared. Grover sat with Emily for a while longer, staring at the candle and occasionally looking at her, finding it hard to believe that not only had he asked her, but she'd said yes. After a while, Grover felt his eyelids get heavy, and he said he was going back to the house. Emily said she'd come in a little while. When Grover opened the front door, something streaked past him into the house. He chased after the cat, back into the front room, where Merlin was already in Emily's lap. "You want me to put him out?" Grover asked. She shook her head, petting the cat and yawning. Grover had started out when Emily spoke. "Thanks," she said. "For what?" "Everything." Grover walked home through the deep snow. He didn't like the feeling of her thanking him for everything, like she was saying goodbye. He looked back to see her still in the window. Once inside his house, he slowly closed the door behind him so he wouldn't make a sound. Biscuit pranced up to him, sniffing him like he smelled the Round Tree's house. "Go on," he whispered. Lowering his head, the dog walked back toward Sudie's room. Grover was thinking about going back to get Emily when he heard noises coming from the guest bedroom where Leela slept. He noticed a line of flickering light underneath the door. He pressed his ear to the door, but didn't hear a thing except somebody moving around a lot. He leaned back on a floorboard that creaked, and the movement stopped. "Did you hear that?" Leela's voice. "Hear what?" A man's voice. Grover felt his chest tighten as he realized who the man was. "Sounded like someone at the door," Leela said. "Should I go check on the kids?" "I didn't hear anything. This old house makes all kinds of noises." "I thought I heard someone," she said. "You want me to check?" There was a long silence in which Grover wasn't sure if someone was coming to the door. He didn't dare move for fear of stepping on the creaky board again. "I'm not sure about this," Leela said. "Neither am I," he said. Grover couldn't pry himself from the door. "Isn't it too soon?" she said. "For you, I mean." There was a pause. "It's just been so long," she said. Another pause. "Let's stop talking," he said. Grover tiptoed to his room and quietly shut the door. He lay in bed, trying to think. His father had been in the room with Leela, and there were noises that seemed to involve both of them. He'd heard similar noises come from his parents' bedroom when his mother was alive, noises he'd known to stay away from. His father shouldn't be making those noises with anyone but their mother. Except, of course, their mother wasn't here. Then he remembered he'd asked Emily to the Christmas waltz, and she'd said yes. "Unbelievable. Unbelievable," he said aloud. He yawned, thinking how back in October he'd hardly noticed this girl who had moved into his neighborhood. He yawned again, and thinking of Emily, rode his exhaustion out beyond the worried world, leaving it far, far behind. Chapter 15. She's in there. Grover woke to Biscuit standing on his chest. The little dog was crying, and making noises he'd never heard him make. Grover sat up, and Biscuit jumped off the bed and ran toward the hallway. "Now what?" Grover yawned. Clay's eyes opened. Biscuit stood in the doorway, whining. Clay closed his eyes, and in a sleepy voice said, "He's your dog, but I'm thinking he might need to do his business." Grover checked his watch. 3 o'clock. Groggy and cold, he pulled on his pants, put on his bedroom slippers, and walked through the chilly house. The guest room door was open. From the moonlight coming in through the window, he could see that only Leela was sleeping in there. With Biscuit still crying, Grover opened the front door to let him out. Biscuit didn't go off the porch, though. The little dog just stood there making those noises. He started to pick the dog up to carry him out in the yard when he glanced across the street. Bright yellow and red squirrels of light framed the round tree's window, a Van Gogh of flames. "Emily!" He ran toward the round tree's house, screaming, "Emily! Emily!" He kept slipping in his bedroom shoes and finally fell hard on his knees in the street, getting a mouthful of dirt and snow. He ran up on the porch and opened the front door. Smoke poured out. Grover coughed, and his eyes stung. "Emily, are you in there?" he shouted. All he heard was the fire crackling. As he started in, Merlin streaked out, disappearing off the porch. Covering his mouth with his pajama sleeve, Grover hurried into the house, but had to back out because the smoke was so thick. He coughed and wiped his stinging eyes. He paused at the door, watching the smoke pour out. She might have gone back to his house and was fast asleep in Sudie's room. He started to back down off the porch when a voice inside him said, "She's in there." He stepped back onto the porch and paused in the doorway. A fireman who'd visited Mrs. Caswell's class had told them that smoke rises and that the best way to get out of a fire was to stay low and crawl. Maybe it was the best way to go into a fire, too. He dropped to all fours and found he could breathe and see a little better. He crawled in the direction of the glow, the doorway of the front room. "Emily," he croaked as he coughed and blinked his eyes. When he reached the doorway to the front room, he saw that the couch and some of the furniture was on fire. And flames were creeping up the walls. The weavings, somehow they'd caught. Emily lay sprawled in the middle, her blanket half covering her. The candle had fallen from the windowsill and was on its side on the floor. "Emily," he said as he crawled up to her. She didn't move. He turned her over. Her face was the color of ashes and her lips blue. "Oh, no," he said. He stood up and immediately couldn't breathe. He felt dizzy. His throat ached with the smoke, and he coughed, trying to hold his breath. He took her underneath her arms and dragged her across the floor in the direction of the door. But he slammed into the door frame, hit his back hard, and dropped her. He had to bend over and feel around for her in the smoke that was getting thicker. He tried picking her up, but was so dizzy he couldn't tell which way to go. He collapsed onto the floor beside her and was getting back up when a firm hand gripped his arm and helped him stand. The smoke was too thick for him to make out who it was, but together, Grover and whoever it was dragged Emily out of the room, down the hall, and out onto the porch. Then, before Grover could turn his head, the person had stepped off the porch and disappeared. Grover dragged Emily out into the snow, pretty far from the house. Clearing a place for her on the front walk with his foot, he laid her down. His head spinning, he fell to his knees, coughing. He knelt there for some time, trying to breathe, but whenever he did, his lungs burned like somehow the fire had gotten down inside him. Emily! In her nightgown, Leela sank down on her knees in front of her daughter. Oh, Lord, please, Lord! She leaned over, pulled her daughter's head back, and breathed into Emily's mouth. Emily's chest rose. Grover? His father was in his pants and t-shirt. He squatted down beside Grover, brushing hair out of his face. Are you okay? Grover nodded, not looking at his father. He'd felt a tinge of anger at his father's touch. I'm okay, he croaked and coughed. The burning in his lungs had let up a little. They watched Leela breathe into Emily, wait for her daughter's chest to go down, and then breathe into her again. His father yelled back to Clay and Sudi, who were making their way across the street toward them. Call 911. Sudi started to turn around and run back into the house. Already called him, Sudi, Jesse said, coming up to Grover and his father. Breathe, sweetheart, breathe. Leela watched her daughter's chest fall. Come on. His father helped Grover to his feet. Jesse stood with them, watching Leela frantically work over her daughter. Clay came up beside them, his face pale, and said under his breath, Oh, sis. Grover's father put his arm around Clay and pulled the boy against him. Sudi came and stood next to Grover, clutching her little silver cylinder like she was calling on a higher power. Years passed. Leela worked over Emily and worked over her. Come on, she'd say. Come on, Emily. She yelled louder. The longer Emily didn't breathe, the angrier Leela became. Just when it seemed to Grover like Emily was gone, in the way his mother was gone, there was a cough. Her eyelids fluttered. She coughed again, gasped for air, and opened her eyes. The color came back into her face and her lips. Oh, thank you, Lord, her mother cried out. Thank you, dear God. She cradled her daughter's head in her lap and rocked in the snow as Emily coughed and coughed. Oh, sweet, sweet Jesus, thank you. A woman who lived down the street stepped out of a semicircle of neighbors and handed them a blanket. With Emily wrapped in the blanket, Grover's father carried her off the cold walk and sat her on the curb where another neighbor had laid out more blankets. The whole time Emily coughed and wheezed. A loud pop, the sound of glass breaking. The front window of the house had shattered, and the fire leapt up, the flames reaching up the side of the house. Oh, Jesse, Leela said, looking back, your house. Not even glancing at the house, Jesse wrapped another blanket around Emily. Two fire trucks, followed by an ambulance, rumbled up the street, their red lights flashing against the houses and their snow chains ringing on the pavement. The sound of the chains weirdly reminded Grover of sleigh bells. The EMTs put an oxygen mask on Emily, then carried her to the ambulance. and began checking her over with Leela beside her. One of the firemen walked Grover to beside a fire truck and began checking him over. "How you feeling?" he asked, looking into Grover's eyes with a light. "My throat hurts." "The smoke does that," the fireman said. "It does a whole lot worse if it has time." He put a blood pressure cuff around Grover's arm. He nodded toward the ambulance. "The EMTs say you saved that girl's life. Said if she'd been in there much longer, that'd have been all she wrote." They heard a crash and turned to see a couple of firemen knock out the rest of the front window. They aimed a fire hose through the window, blasting the front room. A couple of other firemen went in through the front door with another hose. To Grover's astonishment, the fire was out in minutes. It had seemed so huge when he was in the house, like it would take hours, even days, to put out. Before long, the ambulance pulled away with Emily, Leela riding with her. They wanted to keep Emily at the hospital overnight to keep an eye on her. Leela hugged Clay and said she'd call first thing tomorrow. "We'll look after Clay," Grover's father had said. Back at the house, Jesse settled Clay into Grover's sleeping bag while Grover collapsed onto the couch in the living room. Feeling dirty and gritty and reeking of smoke, but too exhausted to do anything about it. In a little while, Grover's father came and led Grover to the bathroom, where he lit a candle. Grover was startled when he saw his flickering reflection in the bathroom mirror. His face was so smudged with soot, he didn't recognize himself. His father helped him out of his pajamas, then turned on the shower. "The water's still warm," he said, testing it with his hand, "even though the power's been out a while now." He helped Grover into the shower, but when he saw Grover could barely move, he took a wash rag, soaped it up, and gently washed his face, his arms, his back, and his legs. Grover remembered when he was a little boy, and his father had often bathed him at night after supper. "Somebody helped me," Grover said, stepping out of the shower.
"Helped you?"
His father dried him with a towel. "Somebody helped me drag Emily out, but I couldn't see them in all the smoke. You need to get some sleep." His father led him back to his room, where Clay was already asleep again, and helped him into bed. His father sat on the edge of his bed for a while, watching him. "I'm sorry, honey," his father said after a while. Then he leaned over and kissed his forehead. "I should have been there." Chapter 16. A Message from God. "Class, a little later this morning, we'll walk to the Wolf House," said Mrs. Caswell. "Let's review what we've learned this week. When was Wolf born?"
Oh!
Ashley's hand shot up. She waved desperately like a survivor in a life raft, trying to get the attention of a high-flying airplane. "Grover," Mrs. Caswell said. "October 3rd, 1900," Grover said, knowing the date as well as his own birthday. Ever since Emily had left, Mrs. Caswell had called on him more. He couldn't get used to the empty desk at his back. Whenever he went off in his head during class, he expected Emily to poke him in the shoulder and whisper in that Mitchell County accent of hers, "Earth to Grover, Earth to Grover." Emily had returned from the hospital the day after the fire. She'd been okay, except that she was exhausted, had a mean headache, and her throat still hurt. She'd slept the whole first day she got back. The round trees were staying at Jesse's. Most of the fire damage to his rental house had been to the front room, but the smoke and water damage made it impossible to live there. Jesse had insisted they stay with him until he could get the house repaired. The same day Emma Lee returned from the hospital, Leela had come over to Grover's house. Grover had answered the door, and the first thing Leela did was hug him a long time. She smelled of hospital. When she let him go, she wiped her eyes and said, "Thank you." Her face was pale and drawn. She had big circles under her eyes. He wondered if she'd slept at all since the fire. "We'll never forget what you did," she said. The way she'd said it unsettled him. What Mrs. Caswell called the past tense had crept in there, as if Leela was already looking back at him from someplace else. "I had help pulling her out of the house," Grover said. Leela nodded. "Your daddy told me about that." She smiled knowingly. "You know who it was?" he asked. "The Lord Jesus was watching out for you and my Emily." She kissed his cheek. "Come visit Emily tomorrow." That evening, their father and Leela had gone for a long walk. Grover watched through the front window as they walked away up the street toward Riverside. When they came back, half an hour later, they didn't look happy. They hugged in the middle of the street, reminding him of airport hugs. Grover hurried back to his room, sat down at his desk, and opened his sketchbook, looking at his latest drawings. He started sketching on a new idea for a weaving, and was so caught up in it that he was surprised when his father knocked on the open door to his room. "The round trees are moving back to Mitchell County." "Because of the fire?" Grover asked, feeling the bottom drop out of his stomach. "There's more to it," his father said. Grover looked out the window. "She's put in for a weekend job at St. Joseph's, which won't come through till January. Until then, she'll commute from Roan to the hospital. When it does come through, she'll work 3 12-hour shifts and rent a room close to the hospital and go home to Roan Mountain on her days off." "It's because of what happened in the guest room," Grover said, unable to keep the anger out of his voice. His father stepped into Grover's room and shut the door behind him. "How did you know about that?" "I heard y'all." Grover's voice shook. "I didn't mean to. It was hard not to hear." His father sat on Grover's bed, irresponsible and selfish. "I said I didn't mean to." "I'm talking about me," he said. "I was selfish to let that happen." "But what does that have to do with them moving back?" "She thinks that what happened to Emily happened because she and I..." His father sighed. "And maybe it did." "It happened because Merlin knocked the candle over," Grover said. The fire department had determined that the fire had started when the candle had fallen over. The part about Merlin was everybody's best guess. The cat hadn't been seen since the fire. Leela thinks it was a warning from God. She thinks he's telling her she needs to move back to Roan Mountain. "She told me she thought Jesus was the one who helped me carry Emily," Grover said. "So does she think God almost burned us up so he could save us?" "Religion is a big part of the Roundtree's lives," his father sighed again. "I didn't understand quite how big." "Who do you think helped me pull Emily out of the house?" Grover asked. "It wasn't Jesus." His father looked at him like he was debating whether to say something.
I don't know, he said, but I do know that I'm sorry about what happened between me and Leela. When you get a little older, you might understand.
I know all about that, Grover said impatiently. We had sex ed last February. They put the boys in one room and the girls in the other, gave us pamphlets, and asked if we had any questions. Mama filled me in on what wasn't in the pamphlet since you were at a meeting in Raleigh.
I'm sorry I've been such a lousy father.
That's okay, Grover said.
And I'm sorry about the guest room. I know your mother hasn't been gone that long.
I don't really care about that, Grover snapped. Not that it made me feel good that my father was in the guest bedroom with the neighbor.
You sound pretty mad to me, his father said.
That's not what I'm mad about, Grover said. Not the main thing, anyway. His father got a knowing look on his face.
You don't want your buddy to move away. Listen, Clay can visit any time, maybe for a few weeks this summer.
It's not just Clay, Grover said under his breath.
Ah, his father said, and that was all he said.
Grover rubbed his forehead and looked out the darkening window.
Can't you tell them not to move away?
I did, his father said. She said she'd prayed about it a long time.
She really thinks what happened to Emily was a message from God?
Leela believes it's a sin for people to sleep together before they get married.
A sin? And that God was punishing Leela for her sin, his father said.
Why would God take y'all's mistake out on Emily?
Leela figures that God knows the worst thing that could happen to a parent would be for something to happen to their child.
His father looked at him. I would have never forgiven myself if something had happened to you when you went in after Emily.
What kind of God would kill the child to teach the parent? Grover asked.
Grover and his father sat on his bed for a while.
Grover wondered why the round trees, especially Emily, had become so important to him. They'd only been here a couple of months. It wasn't like he knew Emily the way he'd known Sam, since they were little kids.
They're moving on Tuesday, his father said.
Why so soon? She doesn't want to impose on Jesse.
They could impose on us, Grover said.
Staying here would be about the last thing Leela would consider.
She blames you for the fire?
She blames the situation.
The situation?
Me and her, such as it is, was.
Grover didn't say anything. His father was trusting him, confiding in him.
Even though it felt very strange to hear about a woman other than his mother, he also thought maybe he was getting to know his father in a different way.
Mrs. Caswell led the class downtown. When they passed Reader's Corner, Grover tapped on the window and waved at Byron. Several girls gathered around the window, looking at Tom, who squinted up from his usual place among the books.
They passed Video Life. Grover didn't pause with the other kids to look at the big poster of Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Grover had been the one to answer the phone the night Video Life had called to tell them Fantastic Mr. Fox was in.
When he'd hung up, he said, "Mama, that was Video Life. They said Fantastic."
His mother had clamped her hand over his mouth and nodded in the direction of Sudi, who sat on the couch doing her homework. She had put her finger to her lips and waved him into the kitchen.
"When you get home from school tomorrow," she whispered, "could you ride your bike down to Video Life to pick it up? I want to surprise her.
Sudie had missed the movie when it had come to the theaters because she'd had the flu, and she was dying to see it. As Grover's class neared the Wolf House, he thought how his father's mood had improved, the reason being the same reason that Grover's class was headed to the old Kentucky home. In spite of all his father's doubts, it looked like a Thomas Wolfe Christmas might work. Little Bit had hand-delivered pamphlets to all the schools and sent press releases to the newspapers and the radio stations and the TV stations. Schools from as far away as Charlotte and Raleigh shipped busloads to visit the house. In the couple of weeks since Thanksgiving, the house had already had more visitors than the rest of the year combined, and school and church groups had made reservations all the way up to Christmas. County commissioners were beginning to back off plans to downsize the staff, and Delbert Lunsford had been silent at the latest commissioners' meetings. As his class crossed over the bridge into town, Grover paused and watched a tractor trailer of Christmas trees rumble beneath, probably from Mitchell County. He'd gone over to talk to Emily at Jesse's on Saturday after she'd come back from the hospital. Grover had walked into the den, which was warm from the big fire Jesse had going in the fireplace. He found Emily curled up in a big stuffed chair, asleep, a copy of Jane Eyre open on her lap. Her hair fell across the back of the couch, a long, black, shiny sheet. Grover started to tiptoe out. "Don't go," she stretched and yawned. "I didn't mean to wake you," Grover said. She sat up, patting the chair beside her, and he sat. "The doctor says I can go back to school tomorrow." Grover nodded, feeling unable to look her in the eye all of a sudden. "They tell me I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you," she said. "I had help," Grover said. "Mama told me." "It wasn't Jesus," Grover said. "Who do you think it was?" "I don't know, but whoever it was has a firm grip." Grover went over to the fire, poking at it with the iron poker, sending sparks up the chimney. "What is it, Grover? You look serious." "You know the other night when you said thank you for everything?" He sighed. "The way you said it felt like you were saying goodbye. And it made me wonder." "Wonder what?" she said, sitting up on the edge of her chair. He looked toward the fire crackling in the fireplace. "If maybe that candle didn't fall by itself, if someone might have helped it fall." "Someone did," she said. "Merlin." Grover rubbed his forehead. "You said the only chance you had of seeing your father was up in heaven, and I was wondering if maybe you decided to..." "Are you kidding?" she asked. "Daddy'd give me down the road if I showed up in heaven, having done something as boneheaded as burn myself up." Feeling a wave of relief, Grover sat back in the chair. "Besides," she said, "I promised I'd go with you to the Christmas waltz." Then her face fell. "Except I guess that can't happen now." "Do you want to move back?" he asked. "I miss Nana, but to tell you the truth, I was getting used to it here. I like Asheville. I like Claxton. I like Mrs. Caswell. I like Mira and all the kids at school. It's even getting so I don't mind Ashley and them." She paused. "And I like Jesse, and your daddy, and Sudie, and..." She looked at him, her eyes shining. "My father says your mother thinks the fire was a warning." "Us moving back doesn't have a thing in the world to do with God," Emily said.
Mama's afraid of how much she likes your daddy. She's afraid something might happen between them. Something already has, Grover thought. It's been hard for Mama to get over Daddy, Emily said. But he was mean to her, Grover said. He was hateful to her in the end. He didn't mean to be hateful. The war did that to him. Still, if somebody slaps you around long enough, it's hard to work up a lot of sympathy for him. I think him being the way he was at the end made it hard for her to get over him. She loved him, but she hated him too. So when he died, she couldn't just flat out miss him. The more you miss somebody, the quicker you get over them. They looked toward the fire. Grover thought about his mother, about how he hadn't visited her grave lately, how his mind had been on other things. Was it because he'd missed her so much when she first died that he didn't think about her quite as much? Maybe a person could only do so much missing. Let's spit on a car. Sam had come up beside Grover on the overpass as their class walked toward the Wolf House. Sam checked to see that Mrs. Caswell wasn't looking, leaned over the rail, and spit. The white drop flew through the air and hit a windshield. Bullseye! Grover didn't smile. You have to get over her, Sam said. You don't get over that kind of thing real quick, Grover snapped. I'm not talking about that, Sam said. Gentlemen, Mrs. Caswell called, and they hurried to catch up. Emily isn't the only fish in the sea, Sam said. What about asking Mira to the Christmas waltz? I'm not asking anybody else to go anywhere, Grover said, as his class wound through the parking lot of the Wolf House. There must have been 20 school buses from Winston-Salem, Charlotte, Raleigh, Chattanooga, Knoxville, Greenville, Columbia, and even Charleston. Grover saw a cat disappear around the corner of the Wolf House that looked a lot like Merlin and was about to go after it when Matthew came walking from the other direction. There was something different about him, but Grover wasn't sure what. Matthew's glasses. He was wearing wire rims instead of the heavy black framed glasses he always wore. Otherwise, he looked the same. Same green army coat, same backpack, same distracted look in his eyes. He didn't seem to notice Grover among the long line of students. Welcome, Grover's father stood at the top of the steps, wearing, of all things, a Santa hat. Welcome to a Thomas Wolfe Christmas, his father said, waving Grover's class in. The house was crawling with schoolchildren, orderly, well-behaved lines of them. Little Bit wouldn't have it any other way. His father had said at supper last night that the attendance numbers were so high that it would probably support funding for the next year. Toward the end of the tour, when his father had taken Grover's class down to the kitchen, to the wood stove where Julia Wolfe had made meals for her boarders, he told them something Grover had never heard before. This reading of What I Came to Tell You by Tommy Hayes will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina.